The coverage of the Gaza war in Western media outlets has included news about the suffering caused by the Israeli bombardment, but some commentators believe that the mainstream media reporting is leaving out something very important. Richard Esko is the host and managing editor of The Zero Hour. He spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg.
What are people missing, or what is the U.S. and Western media missing when they're reporting on the Israel-Gaza situation? I mean, they're certainly reporting about the humanitarian crisis and people being evacuated and hospitals being attacked, etc. But is there something more there?
Absolutely. There's a global pattern underway that's being ignored that is so important to understand what's going on. We all know, if we've been following this story at all, about the International Court of Justice, a ruling that there was reasonable suspicion of genocide in Israel's attack on Gaza. But the systematic nature of that action, it seems to be clear to everyone except the U.S. government and Western media. And I suspect it may be more clear than we're given to understand. And what I mean by that is this. Some of the characteristics of a genocide are rendering an area uninhabitable, trying to force people out of an area they live in, making sure that there are no conditions that make it livable in terms of either homes, healthcare, food, energy, water supply, all of the things that make living possible. The systematic nature of the attack on Gaza, the administration has taken to, I think in response to polling, has taken to clucking from time to time about this attack on this hospital or that attack on that refugee camp. But what we're seeing is systematic in a couple ways, one of which is geographic. When the assault on Gaza began, the people of Gaza were told to move from the north toward the south, which has significance we'll get to in a minute. But they began doing so, many of them, perhaps most of them at this point. The vast majority of Gazans are reportedly refugees driven from their homes, and they began to move south as they were told to do. But the destruction by Israel was not limited to the south. They were struck and attacked along their way, moving southward. As they moved down, we saw a pattern, not one-to-one, but a clear pattern of widening bombing of infrastructure throughout Gaza.
They're going after Hamas, and that Hamas is using these people as a shield. So it's unavoidable, even though they're attempting to do surgical strikes. Is there any merit to that?
First of all, there is no evidence for that. In fact, all of the evidence is overwhelmingly in the opposite. All of the evidence tells us that they are using broad assaults on civilian populations. It should also be noted that under international law, the so-called quote-unquote human shield defense is often not applicable. It's not allowable to say, for example, there has to be a principle proportionality, so that if you believe, as an Israeli military leader, that there is one Hamas soldier in the basement of an apartment building housing 1,200 people, under international law, it's illegal because it's disproportionate to destroy the entire building and the people living in it, which is a principle that gets lost. We've also found time and again that these stories of bases or centers of operation under hospitals, for example, have turned out to be false, and the propaganda films have been debunked by a very good international group, but based in the UK, I believe, called Forensic Architecture, that's done a lot of analyses of these so-called videos, debunking them. So, that's not a defense. B, there is no element of proportionality to it. And, you know, there are certain targets that are forbidden under most circumstances, including hospitals, schools, and things of that nature that have been particularly targeted. Essentially, of, I believe it was something like 35 functioning hospitals in Gaza, there are now none. For example, clinics have been destroyed and so on. So we're seeing, I think there are a couple hospitals running at semi-functional at, the last report was 4 times capacity. And now the latest stage is having driven the civilian population, the surviving civilian population, southward to a large extent. They're bombing them there. Now, Israel has said from the beginning that, and there have been reports of individual members of the Biden administration discussing this idea as well, that now that they're all at Rafah, which is the Rafah crossing, or near there, which is very close to the south, now that there's a gathering of refugees there, attacks on them in their refugee camps, and then stories of an upcoming major military assault, they have no place to go except across the Rafah crossing into Egypt and the Sinai Desert, which has been a stated objective of the Israeli government, according to military planning papers that have been released. They've never officially said so. But if you look at all these elements, the destruction of medical infrastructure, the blockade of food, the cutoff of water, and then the bombing patterns driving them southward, now trying to drive them across the border into Sinai, every single element of this is genocidal in effect. So it's hard to believe, particularly since they've discussed plans of this kind, it's hard to believe that it's not also genocidal intent. But regardless of intent, these patterns of behavior are against international law. They're war crimes.
And meanwhile, there are former Gaza settlers, Israeli settlers, who are talking about going back because it seems like they understand that the object was to depopulate Gaza so that maybe they could go back.
Yes, I think that's a secondary benefit. I mean, I think the primary goal is that Israel doesn't want Palestine or Palestinians around. And Gaza is the most vulnerable population for them. But as we know, they've also intensified attacks on Palestinians in the West Bank, whether that's phase two or not is a matter of speculation. But the idea is to get Palestinians out, at which point, of course, settlers could come back in. And just very briefly, people thought it was a humanitarian gesture on Israel's part. That's how it was presented in the West when they removed their settlers from Gaza. But they had very few of them. And what they chose to do instead was to create a literal concentration camp where they could isolate a minority population, which again is an act of criminality. So I think the settlers are getting ready to move back to where they've been. We've seen countless videos of Israeli soldiers boasting that they've leveled residential areas, that they'd make good farmland. I think one video I saw said, and so on. So yeah, we can imagine that could well be an end product if this plan is successful.
So it's kind of just like old-fashioned conquest, maybe even going back to biblical days when the Israelites came into the land of Canaan and defeated the various groups that were there, you know, because God had promised them the land, that kind of thing.
Right. You know, the Canaan analogy is great. You know, we hear a lot about the people of Israel's or the Jewish people's 2,000-year history in that land, which genetically, I suppose, well, I do have the right of return in Israel if they don't investigate me too carefully. But as exactly as you said, if you study the history, they invaded and displaced the Canaanite tribes. So that would mean that any invader has the right of occupation, number one, which doesn't seem right. And number two, they've also done genetic studies of the descendants of the Canaanites and find that while Jews like me have some of that DNA, That is not the win for the Israel argument they claim it is, because Palestinians have much more and Lebanese have much more and other Arab populations in the region have much more. So it's grotesque to use DNA anyway to overrule the rights of property and self-determination. But even if you go down that road, there's no argument or no justification for what's being done now.
Have you seen much reference in the U.S. media to the idea of ethnic cleansing? Is that something they avoid, as well as this larger pattern you mentioned earlier?
It's definitely something that I think is avoided in the mainstream media and strongly rebuffed when it's brought up in questioning in State Department press conferences or White House press conferences.
They did use it in Bosnia because the whole idea was to be against the Bosnian Serbs.
We could also, you know, if I could find it right now, I would, but we could also take President Biden's language verbatim regarding Putin and Ukraine and substitute Israel and Gaza, and it would be exactly the same. So, yes, of course, they will use the language of ethnic cleansing when it suits them tactically, and rebuff it when it does not. They'll use the language of war criminality when it suits them and not when it doesn't. But this is, in terms of historical references and touchstones, a classic case of ethnic cleansing. It should be seen that way.
What about the people who are now around Rafah or in Rafah? Egypt doesn't want them coming in. And so what's going to happen? Any predictions?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, Egypt's initial response, I think, was based primarily on the burden, financial and otherwise, that they felt they might take on by letting them in.
They already have, more than 200,000. Yeah.
Right. And if you think about a million or more, that's a significant demographic block in Egypt. It's also potentially politically destabilizing. So I think self-interest was one of their prime reasons. I think they were probably also concerned. They stated anyway in the public statements that they were concerned about enabling a genocide by allowing the Israelis to force Palestinians out. I strongly suspect, I don't know, but I would be surprised if the U.S. was not continuing to pursue what we've heard hints about in the past, which is heavy duty negotiation with the Gulf states, the oil states, to subsidize the cost to Egypt, perhaps with some sort of token acknowledgement of a two-state, solution or recognition of a Palestinian state, so that the ethnic cleansing is, you know, much like the United States did with treaties with American Indians, you know, pretending to acknowledge their nationhood even as they were destroying their nations. We might see something like that. It's really too hard to tell, though, now.
Anything else you want to add to what you said?
Yeah, the one thing that I would like certainly everybody to know, because this gets misunderstood so often, is we keep hearing Democrats, including President Biden and Senate Democrats, referring to their $95 billion war bill as an aid bill. First of all, they coyly describe the $14 billion for Israel as security assistance rather than what it is, military aid for an ongoing genocide. But secondly, they insist there is humanitarian aid for Gaza. There is none specified, none. In fact, it enacts into law a complete ban against UNRWA, the UN relief organization, which has the main infrastructure for delivering aid to Gaza. That's part of the genocidal plan to destroy all possibility of aid. It's been an informal ban from the State Department and the White House, but that makes it official. UNRWA got $120 million since October 7th from the United States. So that's a huge cutoff in aid with no promise of additional aid to come. And that's catastrophic.
Richard Eskow is the host of The Zero Hour on Free Speech TV. He spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on February 28th, 2024.